We're out west tonight with the Whistler, out on the ranch, visiting a rancher who has a lazy son-in-law. We'll encounter also a banker facing an audit. And, as was so often the case with tales told by the Whistler, there's an insurance policy in there, and things get complicated quickly in the accounting. This is a story from December 13, 1942.
Wait a minute. Have you heard the strange tales of the Whistler?
I'm the Whistler.
I didn't steal the money. I just wanted to use it for a few days. I was going to put it back, but things went wrong. Now there's going to be a change of ownership. That means an early audit.
Sunday night, and again, CBS presents The Whistler.
I, the Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. And so I tell you tonight the tale of the accounting. Tom Bradford is a middle-aged rancher living a few miles out of town. Tom has married a widow with a grown son named Ralph, who is inclined to be shiftless and lazy. Tom resents this because times are difficult and he's short of help. He further resents the fact that the boy has married a girl from the town and brought her to live with them. They've been here for 2 months now, and Tom has grown crabby and unpleasant.
You know the way conditions are, Mary. Just can't get any help, and this ranch is too much for me to handle alone.
I know, Tom, but Ralph doesn't know anything about a ranch. Ralph was raised in the city.
He can learn, but he's too lazy. All he does is sit around and read magazines.
But he's a delicate sort of boy. He always has been.
Well, let him go out and do a little work, and he won't be so delicate. You've made a baby out of him.
I've done no such thing. If Ralph were able to help you, I'd be the first one to ask him to do it.
Oh, if he amounted to anything, he wouldn't have to be asked. I wish the army would take him.
They deferred him because he wasn't strong enough.
Well, he's not too weak to do a little something around here. And that wife of his, that Vera, she's worse than he is. She could do something. All she does is dress herself up in baby Ralph's.
She loves
him. Never washes a dish because it might ruin her hands. She can't cook. She can't do a thing. I don't like her.
I think Vera's a nice girl.
And I can do without her being here.
You mean you don't want her here?
That's exactly what I mean.
But if she left, that would mean that... Why, Ralph wouldn't stay here without Vera.
Then they can both go.
Do you know what you're saying? Ralph is my son.
I don't care who he is. He can get out and shift for himself. And take that scheming little brat of a wife with him.
Oh, you're just upset, Tom. You'll feel different about things in a few days. You must try to control yourself.
Mary... Before they came here, you and I got along very nicely. But since they've come, we've had nothing but arguments and hard feelings. Ralph and Vera are constantly stirring up trouble. Naturally, you take Ralph's side. You can't see his faults because you're his mother. But at the same time, you're his worst enemy.
Tom, how can you say such a thing?
I know what I'm talking about, and I've made up my mind they've got to go.
Go where? What will they do?
Let Ralph figure it out. Let him get a job.
A job? What can he do?
A lot of things. He's not that helpless.
Oh, but Tom, please, you don't understand.
I understand, all right, and that's final. He and Vera can get out in the morning.
Very well. I'll tell them. And perhaps I should go, too. Is that what you want?
Oh, now, don't be ridiculous, Mary. I didn't say that.
I thought you loved me. I never dreamed you could be like this.
I'm not being mean, Mary, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. You going to tell them, or shall I?
Yes, Tom, I'll tell them.
Very well. I'm very tired. Good night, Mary.
Yes?
Ralph, darling, it's Mother. May I come in?
Oh, yes, Mother.
Sorry to disturb you so late, but I have to talk to you and Vera.
Oh, yeah? What's the matter?
Well, it's about Tom.
What about him?
Well, I don't know how to say it.
Say what? What's wrong with him?
I don't know. He just isn't himself. You know how terribly upset he's been lately.
Yeah.
But he doesn't understand, Ralph. He just doesn't understand.
Understand what?
He doesn't understand you. you and Vera.
What's wrong with me?
Nothing, Vera. It's just Tom. He's in one of those spells. He doesn't like anything or anybody.
You mean he saw us?
Yes, Ralph. He's terribly upset.
Well, what have I done?
Well, he thinks you're lazy. He's angry because you won't help him around the ranch.
What? Oh, that's silly. What do I know about a ranch? Nothing.
I told him that, but he said you could learn.
Well, I wouldn't last half a day doing this kind of work. I'm not the type.
He's terribly unreasonable. He refuses to see it that way.
Well, all to heck with him, then.
I'm lazy, too. Is that what he thinks?
Yes, Vera. I'm terribly sorry and embarrassed.
We aren't farmers. I'm not going to let Vera tend those confounded chickens, and I'm not going to milk any cows.
Ralph.
What does he think I am?
Please, Ralph, don't get excited.
Well, if he feels that way about me, I'll get out.
What? You'll do no such thing. We'll stay right here till I get ready to leave.
Ralph, darling, Tom wants you to leave in the morning.
Why? Well, of all the nerve. This is your house, too, isn't it?
Yes, but, Ralph, if you stay here, you'll have to work, and I don't want you to have to do that. You couldn't stand it. It wouldn't be good for you.
Well, you mean you want us to leave?
No, I don't want you to. But I've thought it all over, and I think you'd better go into town. But don't worry, I'll see that you get along all right.
How? Well, I'll have to get a job.
Well, maybe you can find something to do, something light.
What a fine mess.
I'm sorry, darling. But you better go in the morning.
Go? I wouldn't stay around here another day.
Well, I know bookkeeping. Maybe I could get a job in the bank. That isn't such hard work.
No, but don't worry, darling.
I won't.
Good night.
The next morning after breakfast, Ralph and Vera leave the ranch and go into town. A few days later, Ralph obtains a job in the bank. Then, after a month or so, he is promoted from the adding machine to the teller's cage. Now, 2 months more have passed, and the young teller in the next cage steps into Ralph's compartment.
Busy, Ralph?
Huh? Oh, well, no, Herb. I was just...
How are things going?
All right, Herb.
Yeah? Seem to be having some trouble, Ralph.
Trouble? What do you mean?
Oh, I don't know. You looked a little worried. I thought maybe you were having a bit of difficulty making things balance.
What do you mean? No, I'm not having any trouble. What gave you that idea?
Well, I've been off a few cents a couple of times, and believe me, I know what it means. Why, I've worked all night, several times, trying to find what happened to 2 cents. I know how it feels.
Yeah? Did you find it?
Well, I didn't find the 2 cents, but I found the error in my figures.
Well, I haven't found the error in my figures.
Haven't you? Well, that's good.
What would be wrong with my books?
Why, I didn't say anything would be wrong. I just thought you looked a bit worried. Thought maybe I could help you.
I don't need any help. I'm quite able to take care of my responsibilities.
Good. Glad to hear it. By the way, have you heard the news?
What news?
This bank is being taken over by a system and is to become one of its branches. You know what that means.
No, what's it mean?
It means a complete audit before the end of this month. That isn't very far away. About 15 days.
Yeah?
I just thought you would want everything in order. I know I would.
Yeah? Well, thanks for the information.
You're welcome, Ralph.
For a few moments, Ralph stands in a stupor. Perspiration stands out in large beads on his forehead. For the next hour, he studies over his books frantically. Then, when closing time comes, he rushes home.
Hello, darling. Oh, you have no idea how much I've missed you all day.
Yeah?
Kiss me.
Yeah.
What's the matter with you?
Nothing.
Well, I'm certainly disappointed.
What about?
You come in like this with a long face and look at the lovely dinner I fixed for you.
I'm not very hungry, Vera. I got a headache.
Oh, poor darling. You eat something and then I'll rub your head for you.
No, I don't want anything. Let me alone, please.
Ralph, what on earth is wrong with you?
Nothing's wrong with me. Shut up.
How dare you talk to me like that? Who do you think you are?
I'm sorry, darling. I'm just upset. I'm all on edge.
What about?
Just my nerves.
It's more than nerves. Why don't you tell me what's happened?
Who said anything had happened?
I can tell. Have you lost your job?
No.
Is that fellow you lost $50 to in that poker game threatening you? Is that it?
Look, Vera, I'm in a spot. I don't know what to do. The The bank is changing hands, and there'll be an audit before the end of the month.
Well, what of it? What's that to do with the poker player?
Oh, nothing. I paid him off, but it wasn't $50.
Wasn't 50? What was it?
$2,000.
$2,000?
I didn't lose it all at once, but I tried to make back what I'd lost. I only got in deeper.
Then if you lost $2,000, how did you pay him off?
I borrowed it from the bank.
How could you borrow $2,000 from the bank?
I took it.
What?
Yes, but I was sure I could put it back before the end of the month. Now I'm worried. I don't know what to do. If I don't put it back before the audit, I'll get caught and sent to prison.
Where are we going to get $2,000?
I don't know, but there must be some way, some place to get it.
How about your mother? She'd give it to you. Tom has money.
He doesn't like us.
No? Well, maybe we could make him like us. At least we could try. Let's drive over there. This is Saturday afternoon, and next Monday is a legal holiday. Let's drive over and see what we can do.
All right. At least we can do is try. We'll go.
Ralph and Vera drive to the ranch. And as they go up to the porch, they hear Tom arguing in a loud voice with another man just around the corner of the house. They slip to the edge of the porch and listen.
All right. All right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I've given you all the time I can, Miller. You've been on that piece of land for 2 years now, and you haven't paid a dollar beyond the down payment.
But I've tried my best to make it pay. I've worked hard.
Oh, you haven't done a thing. You know what you are? You're just one of those lazy subsistence farmers. Just grow enough to eat and let it go at that.
That's a lie, Brad.
Oh, is it? I'm foreclosing tomorrow. There's a lot of money tied up in that land, and I need it.
Well, so have I. Every cent I have is there.
I want you out of there by tomorrow.
But look here. My wife is sick. I can't leave now. I won't.
Oh, can't you? Won't you? Well, you'd better be out by noon, Miller.
Well, you just try it. I guess as soon as kill you as look at you.
What did you say?
Get out of here. Get out of here! I'll go. But you just remember what I said.
Well, what do you think of that?
Come on. Let's go on in and talk to your mother.
Tom's going to have a stroke one of these days. He's been warned about those fits of temper.
Might be a good thing for everybody if something did happen to him.
Yeah. Maybe so.
Oh, hello, Ralph, darling. I didn't expect you down today.
He has an extra day off, so we thought we'd come down.
Did you hear Tom arguing with that fellow Miller just now?
Yes, I heard them.
Tom better not play around with Miller. He's a tough-looking customer.
Tom gets worse every day. He rants and raves at the least little thing. Hasn't spoken to me civilly for weeks. I can't stand it here any longer. I'm glad you came because I'm going back with you.
Going back? Leaving Tom?
I've got to. He's unbearable.
Oh, but Mother, you can't leave him. That is, not just now.
Why not?
Well, you've got to put up with him for a while longer because I...
Why don't you tell her, Ralph?
Ralph, what is it? What's happened?
Ralph is in trouble. He needs some money.
Oh, darling, what's happened? Tell Mother.
Well, I borrowed some money from the bank. I have to pay it back before the end of the month.
How much?
$2,000.
What? Good heavens. Well, if you can't pay it back now, they'll have to extend it. They can't do anything else.
Oh, yes, they can.
They'll send him to jail.
You see, they didn't know I borrowed it.
Ralph, darling, you mean you stole it?
No, I didn't steal it. I was just wanted it for a few days. I was going to pay it back, but things went wrong, and now there's going to be a change of ownership. That means an audit.
He's got to have the money right away.
But what can I do? I haven't any...
You've got to get it from Tom. You've got to.
But Tom needs every cent he has to hold on to this place.
Well, you can ask him. You've got to do something. Do you want Ralph to go to the penitentiary?
Good heavens, no.
Then hurry up and talk to him.
But I... What'll I say?
Oh, you'll think of something. Go on in and talk to him.
But do you think this is the time?
Well, I'm desperate. I need that money in one way or another. I'm going to get it.
Oh, yes. Yes, darling. Don't get excited. It isn't good for you. I'll talk to him now.
He just came in the back way. We'll wait in here.
Yes, all right. Oh, Tom, look at your face. It's flaming red.
Huh?
You shouldn't let yourself get so worked up over things.
Miller's a lazy, good-for-nothing fool. Well, he knows I mean business. He'd better be gone by tomorrow noon.
Oh, he'll go. Don't worry.
Huh. You can threaten to kill me.
Please, Tom, forget about it. Come on, dear, sit down. Your lunch is ready.
Don't really need that land. Just that I can't tolerate shiftless, irresponsible people. That place is worth $5,000. Miller paid $750 down, been on it 2 years, and hasn't made a dime since.
Tom, dear, I need some money.
Yes? Well, that's not unusual. Hand me the checkbook. By the way, I've got a list of things you can get from me in town. How much do you want, Mary?
I want to borrow some money, Tom.
Since when do you have to borrow money?
Well, I want to borrow it.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Borrow it. Now, how much do you want?
$2,000.
Two thousand? Are you crazy?
No, Tom, I need $2,000.
What could you possibly need that would cost that much? You certainly have everything that... Wait a minute. What are you getting at, Mary?
Please, Tom. Please lend it to me. I'll pay it back. I promise.
How? Just how would you pay it back? You have no earning capacity.
Well, I know, but Ralph has. He could
Ralph?
Pay...
Ah, I thought it was something like that. What's he got up his sleeve?
He needs $2,000 right away.
Oh, he does. Well, what for? What's he done?
Why, nothing, but he has an opportunity to... Well, it's a business proposition.
Do you expect me to believe that? What's he done? Something at the bank?
He... Well...
Quit stalling. Did he borrow from the bank and forget to tell them about it?
Yes. Oh, Tom, please. Please let me have it. They might send him to jail.
Jail? Oh, no, not Ralph. He couldn't stand it.
Please, Tom, please. He's so young. He didn't realize what he was doing.
Let him go to jail. Maybe they'll teach him that the world wasn't made for him alone.
Oh, you don't mean that, Tom.
Don't I? I knew he was no good from the first day he came here, and that snip of a Vera's worse. She probably put him up.
Please help us, Tom, please.
I wouldn't give a dime to help him. He belongs in jail. As far as I'm concerned, that's just where he'll go.
Oh, Tom, please. Tom, listen to me. Oh, Ralph, darling. He refused. He won't help me.
I heard of the stingy old crab.
So he doesn't like me, eh? Well, he should know what I think about him. I could stick a knife between his ribs. And, well...
Yeah? It really could?
Yes.
What are you saying? What are you thinking?
Nothing, Mother, nothing. I'm just thinking, Tom isn't in very good health. He ought to be careful about those rages. He's likely to die in one of those spells.
Yes. That would be too bad.
Has Tom any living relatives?
No.
Well, I hope for your sake, Mother, that he's kept up on that insurance policy.
But he has.
Let's see now. How much was that? 50,000, wasn't it?
Yes.
That's a lot of money. Oh. But we mustn't talk like this. Mother would feel terrible if Tom should... Well, after all, he's her husband. She loves him.
Yes. Yes, of course.
But you'll have to face it sooner or later. He's getting along in years.
On the other hand, he may live a long time yet. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. I'd be afraid of that Miller after the threats we heard him make.
Ralph, darling, I...
Yes, Mother? What were you going to say?
Nothing. I wasn't going to say anything.
Come on, Vera. Let's get our things out of the car.
Tom goes into town and arranges for the eviction papers to be served on Miller. He returns late that evening and goes straight to bed. The night passes and morning comes. Tom, being an outdoor man, is usually up before sunrise. But this morning, only Mary, Ralph, and Vera appear for breakfast. Finally, Mary, becoming worried, goes to Tom's room and knocks. He does not answer. She opens the door and screams in horror. There on the bed lies Tom, stabbed in the heart.
Well, he's been dead since about midnight. Bedroom window was open, but we can't find the weapon.
Boy, he probably took it with him, Sheriff.
Who?
Well, that fellow Miller. He must have done it.
How do you know that?
Well, he was here yesterday afternoon, and he and Tom had a terrific argument. Tom was evicting him, and Miller threatened to kill Tom.
Anybody else hear him say that?
Yes. I heard him.
So did I.
Yeah, then it looks like Miller's our man. We'll get over there right away before he has a chance to skip. Come on, Bill.
Ralph, darling.
No, Mother. You better go to your room and try to rest.
Yes, sir.
Certainly hope they catch Miller. Do you think they can pin it on him without any evidence?
Well, certainly. You heard what the sheriff said. Miller's threat's all they need. You think Miller did it, don't you?
Why, of course I do. What a silly question.
When the sheriff arrives, he finds that Miller has gone. They put out a search for him. Now, Ralph is back at the bank, in the cage next to Herb.
Well, Ralph, they haven't found that fellow Miller yet.
No. Well, they'll find him.
Do you really think it was Miller who killed your stepfather?
Well, of course I do. He threatened to kill him. Three of us heard him.
Well, sometimes people say things that they never mean to carry out.
Well, you should have heard him. He meant it.
Maybe he did. But that doesn't mean he did it.
What are you talking about?
Oh, I was just thinking.
Yeah?
Circumstantial evidence is an awful thing sometimes.
How do you mean?
Well, so many people have been convicted on a mere word, a mere nothing. People hear a person say something, and by the time they repeat it in court, they enlarge on it a dozen times. I remember a fellow who worked here. In fact, in your cage.
What about him?
Well, he used to play poker quite a bit. And one night he made a haul, won $400 or $500, and went flashing his roll around town and boasting.
So what? What's wrong with that?
Well, he went into the drugstore and started showing off, and when the old druggist asked him where he got all of that money, he kiddingly remarked that he had robbed the bank. Well, that got around and finally took on a serious tone. They checked up here at the bank, and sure enough, there was a $500 shortage. And even though his pals swore that he'd won it in the game, they convicted him on his statement and sent him up.
Well, maybe he did steal it.
He had the opportunity. I have. And you have.
Yeah? Well, is he still in the pen?
No, he was lucky. He got out after 5 years.
Huh. How'd he get out?
He was exonerated. Another teller confessed to it later. They sent him up and let the other kid out.
Oh, he was lucky. 5 years, huh?
Yep. It's a long time. It'd be a shame if Miller were convicted in the same way, and then they later found out that he was innocent, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but oh, he did it. He had the motive, the opportunity. He said he'd do it.
Well, he may not have been the only one with a motive.
It's after 3. I'm going to run along. See you in the morning, Herb.
So long.
Ralph grabs his hat, his face tense with anxiety as he hurries down the street to his car. He drives quickly to the ranch and enters the house. Standing in the middle of the room is the sheriff.
Hello, Ralph. You're just in time.
What? In time? How long have you been here?
Just drove up a second before you did.
Well, what do you want? Did you find Miller?
No, not yet, but they will.
Oh. Well, you certainly got a case against him, all right. He won't have a chance.
I wanted to ask you and your mother and your wife a few more questions.
Well, all right. What do you want to know?
We got a message from someone in town saying that Miller was seen at the gas station about 7 o'clock on the night Tom Bradford was killed.
Well, so what? Maybe he was.
We checked with the attendant. He said Miller had his car packed, had his family, and headed out of town in the opposite direction.
Well, maybe he circled around and then came back.
No. He couldn't have done that.
Why not?
Because he wouldn't have had time. He was seen in the next town an hour later, still headed east. He wouldn't have had time to get that far if he'd circled back here. See what I mean?
Yeah, I see. But he must have come back.
Not unless he flew. And that isn't probable.
But there must be some explanation. He must have gotten here some way. Maybe he killed him earlier. Maybe that's it.
Say, that's right.
No. We can figure the time of death closer than that. It was near midnight. That's definite.
I see. Well, who told you about this? Who sent you this message?
We don't know. It was printed with a pencil and mailed in town.
Yeah? Is that all it said?
Well, no. There was more to it.
Huh? What else?
Oh, there's always cranks butting into cases like this. Amateur detectives are always getting hunches, and yeah, they're seldom ever right.
Well, what did it say?
I'll tell you. Calm down.
Yes, Ralph, take it easy.
Oh, yes, darling, don't be so upset. It isn't good for you.
Well?
It said that the real murderer would probably be found in the immediate household of Tom Bradford.
What?
And since we haven't found the weapon, We might check over the house.
I never heard of such a thing.
That's the biggest bunch of nonsense I ever heard of. Why, my mother loved Tom Bradford. So did I, so did Vera. He was like a father to us.
Please, Ralph, don't shout so.
Well, my partner's been looking over the place while we've been talking. But I imagine that he'll find...
Just a minute. I hate to bother you right now, but... Here you are, Sheriff. Take a look at this.
Well, a knife.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently... covered with blood.
That's right. I found it in Mrs. Bradford's room. Right under the mattress.
What? Well, how did it get there?
Yes, yes, Mrs. Bradford. How did it get there?
I put it there. Afterward.
Mother, what are you saying? You're out of your mind.
Did you kill your husband?
Yes. Yes, I killed him.
No, she did not. She couldn't.
I killed him and I had a good reason. I hated him. He was cruel. Cruel to me, and he hated Ralph. I couldn't stand it any longer, so I killed him.
She's lying. She didn't do it.
I don't know. We know Miller didn't do it.
You can't do this, Mother. I know what you're trying to do.
What's she doing?
She's trying to protect me. She thinks I did it.
Thinks you did it.
Mother, do you realize what this means? Tell him the truth. Tell him.
I did it. I killed him. The knife is from my own kitchen. I did it, and I'm glad.
She's crazy. She couldn't have done it.
Why not?
Because I killed him. She's trying to protect me.
Ralph, what are you saying?
I did it, I tell you. I ought to know. I had a better motive than she.
What motive?
I'll tell you that later.
I don't believe you killed him, Ralph. You're trying to protect your mother now because you know she did it.
I did it, I tell you. I did it.
Well, that's enough for me. I believe her. But we'll soon find out. We'll check the fingerprints on the knife.
That won't prove anything.
Why not?
Because I used the glove. Mother must have taken the knife from the body and hidden it, thinking that I'd slipped up.
That's just so much talk, and you're just shooting in the dark. Come on, Bill. Let's go back to town and do some checking.
The only fingerprints on the knife were Mary's, and try as he might, Ralph could not convince them that he wasn't trying to shield his mother. Ralph realized finally that his mother was sure to be convicted, and as the day of the audit grew closer, he became frantic about the money he had to have. On the day his mother was sentenced to prison, he visited the attorney.
I thought I'd drop in and see about that policy Tom Bradford left for my mother. Quite a few things to be take care of, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, Ralph. That policy would have been paid long ago, but there are certain technicalities in this state regarding insurance.
What's that?
We had to wait till the finish of the trial.
Well, why? She's the beneficiary. She's entitled to insurance.
Not here. If the beneficiary is convicted of killing the insured, the beneficiary cannot receive the proceeds of the policy. The same is true as to Tom's farms and other property.
What? What about me? I'm the son. There are no other heirs.
You were not the blood kid to Tom Bradford, and you were not legally adopted. Therefore, all the property and the insurance reverts to Tom's estate. Nothing we can do about it.
Well, Ralph, there you are, holding the bag. Now you've got to face the music at the bank. With all your scheming, nothing was gained. You planned to kill Tom and blame it on Miller, but instead got your mother upset and she killed him because she wanted to keep you from doing it. That's what you believe, Ralph, but you're wrong. I know. Your mother didn't do it. She found the body and removed the knife, thinking you'd slipped up. It was your dear little wife, Vera, who did it, and she'll never tell. But she'll pay for it later. I know.
CBS has presented The Whistler. Original music for this production was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The Whistler is written and directed by J. Donald Wilson and originates from Columbia Square in Hollywood.
I, the Whistler, will return to tell you another interesting tale. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
in this case, we have to be assured sort of after the fact that justice will be done. It's a little bit the way Alfred Hitchcock used to do it at the end of his TV show. You rarely saw retribution for the evildoer. It's Alfred Hitchcock who had to assure you, I suppose, for the sake of the television code, at the end of each show that justice would be done. And so it was with The Whistler tonight in the accounting from December 13th, 1942. We'll find out what kind of blindness justice works with in the inner sanctum when we walk into that radio realm next. This is Old Time Radio Drama and the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Richard Widmark is our star tonight, and he has a very special power, one envied by many and shunned probably by many more after just a little bit of thought about the matter. Our story comes from October 30th, 1945, and it's called The Man Who Couldn't Die.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends. This is your host of the Inner Sanctum, inviting you in through the creaking door. Come on in and enter into the spirit of things. don't pay any attention to those gurgling sounds you hear. They're the unfortunate ones, the midnight spirits who were caught haunting before midnight. Poor things. All they can do now is gurgle, because they've evaporated into distilled spirits.
Oh, what a horrifying thought, Mr. Host. Can't we ever talk about the brighter side of life?
Well, don't forget, Mary, murder is my business.
Well, thank goodness it isn't mine. And right now, I'd much prefer to talk with our Lipton listeners about something more conducive to happy spirits. I mean, a cup of hearty, piping hot Lipton tea. You know, it's really wonderful, the extra delight you get from this superb tea, friends. And the reason is simply this, Lipton's grand brisk flavor. Brisk, you know, is the tea expert's own word for the fresh, full-bodied, lively flavor of Lipton tea. Because unlike ordinary teas, Lipton's is never flat-tasting or lifeless. Lipton tea is always spirited, full-flavored, truly satisfying. Why, I'd even go so far as to say that once you've tried it, I think you'll enjoy Lipton tea more than any other tea you've ever tasted.
And I'll go even further, Mary, and introduce our listeners to tonight's story. It's an original radio play written especially for Inner Sanctum by Emil Tepperman, and starring Richard Widmark in the role of Alex Gregory. It's about a man who became master of a secret so fearful that it could never be revealed to any mortal, living or dead. But let him tell you the story himself, how he learned the most terrible secret in all the universe, and what he did with it.
It was an evening in September, the 15th to be exact, when I first learned of the existence of Elixir Number 4. It happened at Professor Jarman's house just off the college campus. You've heard of Jarman, of course. He was to chemistry what Einstein is to physics. But it was his daughter, Elaine, that I was interested in that evening in September when I rang their bell.
Well, hello, Alex. Oh, gosh, is it that late? I'm not even dressed.
Hi, sweet. Snap it up, will you? The last show starts at 8:30.
Well, it won't take me long. Wait for me in the library. I'll be ready in a jiffy.
I knew my way around the house. I went into the library, and the first thing I noticed was that the door to Professor Jarman's private study was ajar. It had never happened before. The private study and the laboratory beyond were forbidden territory in the Jarman home. Not even Elaine was allowed in there. And now the door was open. I'd heard stories of Jarman's experiments with new and secret formulae. So here was a chance. A possible chance to find out what the old codger was working on. I couldn't resist. I pushed open the door and I stepped into the private study. I could hear Jarman in the lab talking to himself. Elaine had told me once that he always talked to himself in the lab. I stood quietly in the study, but I couldn't make out what he was saying in there. I looked around. The study was just a small cubbyhole with a chair, a bookcase, and a desk. And on the desk, I saw the open diary. A single sentence was written on the open page. I stepped closer. And then I got the first shock. For that sentence was written in Latin. My Latin was rusty, but I was able to decipher the words, Vitae secretum in elixir quartum perpetus habeo. In elixir number 4, I have the secret of perpetus life. Perpetus. That was the one word I couldn't seem to place. In elixir number 4, I have the secret of something. Life. I was puzzling over that word perpetus when suddenly the laboratory door was flung open.
What are you doing at my desk?
Oh, hello, Professor Charman.
I asked you, what are you doing at my desk?
Well, the study door was open. I thought I'd see if you were in here.
You were reading my diary.
Oh, no, Professor.
You saw the entry in my diary.
Well, really, Professor, I assure you.
Do you read Latin?
Latin? Well, I don't understand.
You're sure you don't understand that?
No, I don't.
Ready? Well, is anything wrong?
Elaine, I've told you time and again, no one is to be admitted to my study.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dad. You must have left the door open. Oh, Alex, you shouldn't
I'm
have
terribly
come.
Sorry, Elaine. I found the door open and I thought Professor Jarman was in here. I just wanted to say hello.
All right. No harm done as long as you can't read Latin. Now get along, you two. I'm busy, but keep out of my study hereafter.
I took Elaine to the movies, but I haven't the faintest recollection of what the picture was about. Through my mind kept running that Latin sentence. Vitae secretum in elixir quartum perpetus habeo. When I said goodnight to Elaine at her door after the show, I hurried home to my room and I got out an old Latin dictionary. I looked up the word perpetus. And then I got a strange, cold feeling down my spine. For the word perpetus meant perpetual. The Latin sentence which Jarman had written in his diary meant, in elixir number 4... I have the secret of perpetual life. Professor Jarman had discovered the secret of immortality. All the next day, I conducted my chemistry classes purely by instinct. I couldn't take my thoughts from elixir number 4. Every voice in the classroom seemed to sing the same refrain.
Accomplished by adding to a dilute solution of H2SO4... A quantitative
immortality. Never to know the fear of death. To live on serenely. To watch the world change through the centuries. Never to die. It grew on me like a festering tumor, this terrific dream of immortality. Everlasting life. I had to have elixir number 4. In the afternoon, the first free period I had, I went down the hall to Jarman's office.
Come in.
May I come in for a moment, Professor?
Oh, it's you. Yes, come in. I haven't much time.
Professor, I want to apologize for last night.
Let's forget about it. No harm done.
Well, whatever it was you had written in your diary, it must have been pretty important.
Oh, no, not at all. Only some chemistry notes. Nothing of any importance. Just something I've been experimenting
with. Well, I'd be very glad to assist you, Professor. Anything I could do,
That's very kind of you, young man, but I don't need any assistance, thank you. As a matter of fact, the experiment is completed.
You mean you're all finished?
All but the practical application.
Oh. Well, couldn't I help you on that?
It won't be necessary. Tonight, I'm taking the last step.
Tonight? I knew what that meant. Tonight he was going to use elixir number 4. He was going to administer it to himself. I had to act tonight or never. Jarman's keys were on his desk. I distracted his attention and I managed to pick them up without his noticing. Then I hurried across town to a locksmith and had him make duplicates of Jarman's house key, his study key, and his laboratory key. Then I returned to the college, and I managed to replace the keys on Jarman's desk while he was out. Now, I was ready for an adventure into immortality. At 8:30 that evening, I let myself into Jarman's house, opened the study door, and stepped quietly over to the laboratory. I knew Elaine was at a sorority meeting. The professor and I were the only ones in the house. Jarman was standing at the lab table with his back to me, talking away to himself. There was a small vial on the table and a hypodermic syringe alongside it.
The quantity administered yesterday will be sufficient. At my age, since my blood is too thin, I require the additional dose. But a younger man would need only one injection to cause the necessary type change in his blood. Who's that?
Good evening, Professor Jarman. I hope I'm not interrupting.
What are you doing here? How did you get in?
So elixir number 4 changes the bloodstream, hmm?
What do you want in here?
Quit stalling, Professor. I know what elixir number 4 is.
Ah.
So this is it. Elixir number 4.
Careful. Don't spill it.
How much of this stuff have you got?
That's all there is. 5 cc's.
You mean you haven't got any more?
It took me 5 years to distill 10 cc's. Before that, I experimented for 10 years. I failed 3 times.
And this is your 4th try, huh? Elixir number 4. And there isn't any more of it?
It'll take me 5 years more to make up another bat. Please be careful. Don't drop it.
Don't worry, I won't. You said this is enough to make the average man immortal. Me, for instance?
It's not for you. You hear me? Not for you.
Oh, yes, it is, Professor. It's for me.
I won't let you... What are you doing with that mallet?
What do you think?
No.
I'm so sorry, Professor.
Wait, I'll let you have it. Don't kill me.
I've got to kill you. When I take this dose of elixir number 4, I'll be immortal. And I don't want anyone to know it.
Away, you fool! You'll never enjoy your immortality. You'll wish you were dead 1,000 times. I'll come back to remind you. Back to remind you.
I didn't hit him hard enough to kill him. That wasn't part of my plan. But when he lay unconscious on the floor, I searched among the chemicals until I found what I wanted. I mixed some chemicals in a test tube and I watched the fumes forming. Then I held the test tube against Jarman's mouth, forcing the deadly gas into his lungs. When I was sure he was dead, I wiped the tube clean of my fingerprints and put it back in the rack. Then I picked up the vial of elixir number 4, the hypodermic syringe, and I hurried away, locking all the doors behind me. As soon as I got home, I filled the hypo with elixir number 4, and I gave myself the injection. Almost immediately, I felt a strange radiance pervading my body. A new strength was flowing in my blood. I was immortal. I couldn't die. I would go on living and living and living forever.
Hey, what's going on here? What's all this about living forever? If you ask me, it would be more of a curse than a blessing. Now, just suppose we all took a shot of this elixir number 4. I think of all the people who'd lose their jobs. grave diggers and stone cutters and shroud makers and hearse drivers and... Oh, why go on? You see what I mean. Why, everybody'd be out of a job. We'd all practically starve to death.
Well, then, Mr. Host, maybe we can be glad that nobody has ever found the fountain of youth. You know, I think it's not a matter of trying to live forever. The important thing is to get more enjoyment out of every day.
Mm-hmm. For instance, Mary?
Well, for instance, one splendid way to get more enjoyment out of an otherwise dull day is to invite your friends in for tea. It's a delightful neighborly custom, made even more delightful when the tea you serve is Lipton's, because there's so much extra pleasure in Lipton tea. The party will seem more of a party. The conversation will be more sparkling, and your reputation as a thoughtful hostess will soar to the skies the moment your guests take their first sip of Lipton tea. For Lipton's wonderful, brisk flavor makes it a favorite with everybody. So when friends drop in for tea, or the family gathers around the dinner table, serve them Lipton's, tea at its delicious best.
And now let's get back to our story. We're all anxious to see what this fellow Alex does with his secret of perpetual life. Just imagine, a man with all that time on his hands. Time to kill. And kill. And kill.
Immortality. I had it in my blood. I could feel it pulsing in my veins. The vitality, the power. I had to establish an alibi. Not that I expected to need an alibi. Jarman's death would surely look like an accident or suicide when his body was found in the laboratory in the morning. But I wasn't taking any chances on a murder charge. I had so much more to lose now. Wouldn't it be ironic if they were to execute me for murder? Me, an immortal. Next morning, I stopped at Jarman's house and rang the bell. I knew Elaine must have gone right to bed when she returned from the sorority meeting last night, because she never disturbed her father when he was in the lab. But now, when she discovered that he hadn't been to bed all night, she'd want to investigate. And I wanted to be there when the body was found.
Oh, good morning, Alex.
Hello, sweet. What's wrong? You look worried.
Come on in. Alex, I am worried. Dad's still in the lab. He didn't go to bed last night.
Well, what of it? He must be working on something big.
No, I'm afraid something's happened. I knocked at the door just now and there was no answer.
The door was locked?
Yes, but I have a pass key. I wonder if I ought to use it.
Well, of course you should.
Please, Alex, you come with me.
Of course, darling. Together we opened the laboratory door. I was all set to act horrified when we discovered the body on the floor. But there was no need to act. I was horrified. For the lab was empty. There was nothing on the floor. The body of Professor Jarman was gone. I don't know for how many hours after that I walked the street, confused and frightened and uncomprehending. I tried to reason it out, how Jarman's body had walked out of that lab. There was only one solution. Jarman had already taken one dose of elixir number 4. It must have counteracted the poison that I'd forced into him. He must have gotten up and then walked away. But where? And why? I recalled what he'd said before I hit him with the mallet. Yes, I could hear his voice faintly strumming at my brain.
You'll never enjoy your immortality. You'll wish you were dead 1,000 times. I'll come back to remind you.
The next day, I went to Elaine's house, and I saw that she was taking her father's disappearance pretty hard.
Oh, Alex, I don't know what to make of it. Do you think that he's...
Now, take it easy, baby. Maybe he's just suffering from amnesia. Maybe he just walked out of the house. He might turn up tomorrow.
I have a terrible feeling, Alex, that he's dead.
What makes you think so?
Oh, I don't know.
Now, please, Elaine, that won't do you any good.
Oh, but it's the uncertainty. If I only knew for sure. Alex.
Hmm?
Do you believe in mediums?
Communicating with the dead?
Do you believe a medium can put you in touch with the dead?
Oh, is that what you're thinking of, darling? Going to a medium?
Don't you see, Alex? If Dad is dead, maybe...
I was worried, too. I had to know if Jarman was dead or alive. I had to know before I could start enjoying life. Yes, that might be a good idea, Elaine. Can't hurt to try. There's a medium in town.
Oh, I don't know what I want to do. Let me think about it.
Well, sure, darling. In the days that followed, I began to doubt whether I really was immortal. Was elixir number 4 really the elixir of life? Was I really going to live forever? If there was only some way to prove it. Then I remembered what Jarman had said, that the elixir caused a change of blood type. Well, that'd be easy enough to check. Elaine was taking a medical course, so I asked her to test my blood on the pretext that I thought I had anemia.
It won't hurt, Alex. Just the needle.
Ouch.
There, now I've got all the blood I need. Just sit here a minute while I make the test.
Well, does it take long?
Only a minute. Alex.
She was excited. There was something different about my blood.
Alex, come here quick.
What?
Look. Oh, look, Alex. I can't be mistaken. Your blood. It's a new type.
Elaine couldn't get over the discovery that my blood was a new type. I'd asked her not to tell anyone about my new blood type, but I knew she wouldn't be able to keep the secret for long. And once it got out, people might begin to suspect what I already knew for sure, that I was immortal. Oh, I couldn't afford to have that known, because then everybody in the world would be envious of me. They'd hate me, too, because they'd know I could go on living long after they were dead. Oh, no. No, it had to be a secret forever. No one in the whole world must know, except myself. And the only person who could spill the secret now was Elaine. So, there was only one thing to do. Elaine furnished the opportunity herself the next day.
Alex, I've been thinking about that medium. I've got to know if Dad is alive or dead.
All right, whatever you say, darling, if it'll make you feel any better. I'll go with you, of course. Just the two of us, huh? We made a date to go to the seance that evening, and I made my plans accordingly. I didn't intend that Elaine should leave the seance alive. We arrived at the medium's house promptly at 9:00. The medium asked Elaine and me to sit close to each other. And then she put out the lights.
Alex.
It's all right, sweet. I'm right here. I'm right next to you.
I'm frightened.
Now, there's nothing to be frightened about, darling. I'm right here with you.
But it's so dark. I can't see anything. I don't hear anything. Where's the medium?
She's still here. She's right across the table. She's gone into her trance.
Do you think she'll contact Dad's spirit?
I don't know, darling. Wait and see. I timed myself carefully, waiting for the moment when the medium should be well into her trance. Then I took out of my pocket the hypodermic syringe. I held the plunger in my left hand while I gripped Elaine's arm with my right, my thumb over the artery.
Alex, my arm, your fingers hurt.
It's all right, sweet. Slowly, I brought the hypodermic needle up close to the artery. One bite of the needle, a single plunge of the plunger, and death would come almost instantaneously. And no one in the world could say that it hadn't been heart failure. But suddenly, just as I had the plunger ready, I heard... I heard something strange. A sound. In the room where there should have been no sound.
You'll never enjoy your immortality. You'll wish you were dead a thousand times. I'll come back to remind you. Back
the
to remind you. Back
the voice
to
of the
you.
Dead.
Back to remind you. Back
Charmin,
to
where are you? Charmin, stop.
Back
you're dead. You're dead, Charmin. You can't be
back
talking.
Remind.
You're dead.
Back to remind.
I saw
back
your
remind.
Dead body. I killed you myself.
Back to remind.
Suddenly, the lights flashed up. The room was full of police.
Arrest him, officer. He killed my father. You heard his confession.
That voice.
That was Dad's voice, Alex. A recording.
What? A recording?
That's why he always talked to himself in the lab. He had a wire recording machine. He talked while he carried on his experiments so that there'd be a permanent record. The wire recorder picked up everything that was said in the lab the night you killed him. But we could never have proved it was your voice in court if you hadn't confessed just now.
Yes, but the body.
I found Dad dead that night when I got back from the meeting. And I hid the body until I could find his murderer. And now, Alex, I found him.
All through the trial, Elaine sat and watched me. All the time the jury was out, she sat and watched me. And she watched me while they read the verdict of guilty. Her eyes never left me when I stood up to be sentenced and heard the judge say,
Alex Gregory, it is the judgment of this court that you be confined to the penitentiary for the rest of your natural life.
Me of all people. Me sentenced to imprisonment for life. Me in whose veins runs the precious elixir number 4. Imprisonment for the rest of my natural life, which means forever.
You know, I feel kind of sorry for Alex. He really got a tough break. Locked up in a cell for all eternity and no way out. Yes, looks like they'll have to build a new jail around him every 1,000 years or so. Of course, there's one way out for him. He could let his beard grow for a couple of centuries, and when it gets long enough, he could hang himself.
Oh, imagine such a thing, Mr. Host.
Yes, it would be sort of breathtaking, wouldn't it, Mary? Poor Alex. He probably had many good impulses in his lifetime. As the trouble is, he didn't follow them.
Well, Mr. Host, I'm afraid that's something we all do every now and then. For instance, perhaps some of you Inner Sanctum fans have promised yourselves the pleasure of trying Lipton tea, but somehow just haven't gotten around to it. Or maybe you've just forgotten it when you're writing out your grocery list. Well, this time, make sure. Add Lipton tea to your grocery list right now. For until you do try it, you're missing a real treat. Why not start enjoying lively, full-bodied Lipton tea beginning tomorrow?
And now, friends, before I say goodnight, here's a pleasant bit of philosophy. Biologists tell us that all life starts in a little cell. And for convicted murderers, it ends there, too. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Death in the Limelight by A.E. Martin. And next week's Inner Sanctum story, brought to you by the makers of Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup, and directed by Hyman Brown, next week's story is called You'll Never Escape. So, if you feel in a capturing mood, join us next Tuesday. Until then, good night. Pleasant dream.
Friends, you want to know how to make an ordinary meal into a feast? Start it right. Start it bright with tempting, heartwarming Lipton's Noodle Soup.
Lipton's noodle soup is ready to serve in a jiffy, and what a treat it is. Lots of tender, golden noodles, and a world of real chickeny flavor that makes it taste homemade. It's economical, too. Lipton's noodle soup mix costs less and makes lots more than canned soups. So try Lipton's noodle soup real soon. And don't forget to tune in next week at the same time for another Inner Sanctum Mystery.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The man who couldn't die, well, actually, I think he probably could. In that broadcast from the Inner Sanctum, October 30th, 1945, starring Richard Widmark. Another story of ill-doing and recompense. Crime and Punishment, I suppose, as Dostoevsky would have put it more simply. And our final foray for old-time radio drama for this Saturday night. We'll have some more tomorrow night, though, from 8 to 11, and I'm Norman Gilliland, hoping you can join me then, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Cal Palman with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We just finished listening to old-time radio drama, and coming up at 11 o'clock, we will be switching on to the BBC Radio News. But until then, we have time for a little bit of Wisconsin weather and a look at what's coming up tomorrow. First of all, tonight it'll be mostly clear with lows in the 40s to near 50. Sunday it should be sunny and partly cloudy with highs in the mid-70s in the north and east with lows in the 80s in the southwest, and it should be cooler near Lake Superior. Sunday night, it should be clear to partly cloudy with lows from around 40 in the far north to the low 50s in the southwest. Monday, it should again be partly cloudy with a chance for showers and thunderstorms, with highs in the upper 50s in the northwest to the 70s in the southwest and cooler near Lake Superior in Michigan. Tuesday should be partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers in the east, with lows in the upper 30s in the far north to the mid-50s in the south, and highs will be in the upper 50s to near 60s in the far north to the upper 60s in the south, and it should be cooler near Lake Superior in Michigan. Coming up tomorrow on the Ideas Network, Wisconsin Public Radio, at 6 a.m. when the BBC Radio News turns off, we'll be doing On the Media for news and reviews of media coverage and issues involving the media. And at 7 o'clock, On Your Money, enjoy the program that makes money fun. It's Kevin McKinley, On Your Money. At a.m., the NPR Word Game says to you. 9 a.m., enjoy the call-in program that's all about language, Away with Words. 10 a.m., we will be switching on to A Prairie Home Companion, which will come to you from the beautiful state of Georgia, where spring has sprung like a bell that's been rung. And at noon, to the best of our knowledge, which will be a discussion of an aging Nobel Prize winner who researches the mechanics of memory.